Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Marty Johnson reporting. Security is significantly tighter today in Belgium, Germany, and elsewhere in Western Europe after the arrests of dozens of suspected Islamic terrorists in the last 24 hours. Thousands of police are spread out across Belgium, with Belgian troops called in to play a supporting role. Soldiers are guarding the Jewish Museum in Brussels and buildings in the Jewish quarter of Antwerp. Belgium has increased its terror warning to level 3, the second highest. The U.S. and Britain say they will work together to prevent attacks after meetings between President Barack Obama and British Prime Minister David Cameron. Mr. Cameron said both countries face national security threats that Islamist extremists are following a poisonous and fanatical ideology. Meantime, thousands of Muslims around the world are protesting the depiction of the Prophet Muhammad by the French satirical weekly magazine Charlie Hebdo, with some of the demonstrations turning violent. The latest issue of Charlie Hebdo shows a weeping depiction of the prophet on its cover, holding a sign headlined, "All is forgiven," with "Je suis Charlie," or "I am Charlie," underneath. It is the first edition since gunmen attacked the magazine's office in Paris last week, killing 12 people. Somalia's prime minister has dissolved his 60-member cabinet. Omar Abdelrashid Tamarck has decided to withdraw the cabinet after strong opposition from lawmakers. He's asked parliament for 14 days to form a new cabinet. The lawmakers have unanimously agreed to that request today. Officials in Malawi say massive flooding in that country has killed at least 176 people, with more rain in the forecast over the next 2 to 3 weeks. The United Nations estimates some 110,000 people have been forced out of their homes due to the flooding. The UN's World Food Program says it's airlifting more than 100 metric tons of food. Neighboring Mozambique is also ravaged, 38 people dead there. This is VOA News. Nigerians marched in the streets of Abuja today, calling for change in the wake of a deadly attack on the northeastern towns that has killed hundreds and left thousands more displaced. Chris Stein reports for VOA.
Calling themselves the Youth Advocates for Change, about 150 people marched through the center of Abuja, saying things could not remain as they are in Nigeria. The Islamist extremist group Boko Haram earlier this month attacked the area around Baga, a fishing village in the northeastern Borno state. Zayed Abdullahi, the president of the Youth Advocates for Change, says the group staged the march because it is upset about the nation's direction.
The government doesn't even care to make a statement about it, for free and fair elections, for everything basically. The whole country is upside down.
Earlier this week, Mr. Jonathan visited troops in the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. Nigerians will vote for president on February 14th. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
The United States has joined Israel in condemning the International Criminal Court decision to open a preliminary probe into possible war crimes committed against Palestinians. U.S. State Department spokesman Jeff Rathke on Friday called it a tragic irony that Israel is now being scrutinized by the ICC after withstanding thousands of rocket and bomb attacks. A preliminary probe is not an investigation, but it weighs information about possible crimes and jurisdiction issues to establish whether a full investigation is merited. ICC prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said her office will conduct an analysis in full independence and impartiality. Rathke says the U.S. strongly disagrees with the ICC prosecutor's action and the place to resolve differences between the two parties is through direct negotiation, not unilateral actions by either side. In U.S. politics, Mitt Romney, the Republican candidate who lost the 2012 presidential election to Barack Obama, confirms he is considering another run for the White House in 2016.
I'm giving some serious consideration to the future, but this I know. We can win in 2016 as a party, in the House, in the Senate, and in the White House, if we communicate a clear vision of where we're taking this country, what we believe in.
Mr. Romney spoke Friday night at the closing of a three-day Republican committee gathering near San Diego, California. The committee approved plans to cut the number of presidential debates, primary debates, in half compared with 2012, while seeking to introduce what a spokesman called an element of conservatism to those asking questions. Pope Francis is in the Philippines. He traveled today to the far eastern city of Tacloban to comfort survivors of the super typhoon Haiyan, which devastated the region in November of 2013, leaving more than 7,300 people dead or missing. He says his visit is meant to express closeness to the survivors. I'm Marty Johnson.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington.
It is my right to say that what such leader of the opposition said is true. Presidential elections can be organized.
The Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister denies media reports that the presidential election could be postponed.
When the president last week was going all over the country, we are now recording very, very encouraging confirmed cases.
Sierra Leonean President Ernest Bai Koroma visits areas worst hit by Ebola.
The objective of the workshop, one, is to ensure that local government implement the local government public financial management manual, which was rolled out in the year 2013.
And in South Sudan, officials undergo training on the electronic payroll system. We'll have details, those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister says the presidential election will be held as originally scheduled in the constitution. This, contrary to media reports that the poll could be delayed. Lambert Mende told me that main opposition leader Vital Kamerhe is to blame for peddling rumors that the election will be postponed.
What I said is that Mr. Kamerhe, who is an opposition leader, was not through when he was saying that the constitution is forbidding that any election be organized before or after the day of the end of the presidential mandate. So, showed that it is false. He didn't read the constitution, or is he telling lies? Because if we lose our president, if an accident occurred, the constitution have already given provision that election can be organized before the end of this mandate.
So what you are saying is people are speculating and that the government will go with what the constitution says, irrespective or contrary to opposition calls that the government want to delay the elections.
I say that the government is ready to help the electoral commission to organize the election at the date that is written in the constitution. It is my right to say that what such leader of the opposition said is not true. The presidential election can be organized even before the end of the mandate of the president. And it can be organized after the end of the mandate of the president. And as for example, let me tell you that in 2011, we elected the president some weeks after the end of its mandate. It is what I'm telling you. So please, don't dramatize it.
Are you therefore saying the opposition is confusing the public?
Yes, it is what we have witnessed from, I think, 1 year or 1 year and a half. This opposition, this fraction of the opposition led by Mr. Kamerhe is trying to confuse the public opinion in Congo. I don't know why. So we think that we are ready to organize, to give the Electoral Commission means for organizing the election in the time of the Constitution. We didn't say anything else. If there is something that will happen, the Electoral Commission will go to the Constitutional Court to ask for an extension. But we are not in that situation.
Are you willing to meet the opposition? Because obviously people are not happy with this situation in the country at the moment.
We are asking them to cool the situation. We are asking them not to make people of Congo fear. I don't see what is the interest of real politicians, patriots, to make their own people living in fear, under fear. It is something that we really blame them. And lucky enough, we have people, a following them at all.
Lambert Mende is the DRC Information Minister and government spokesman. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. A spokesman for the Sierra Leonean government says President Ernest Bai Koroma encouraged people in the West hit Ebola areas to cooperate with efforts to contain the disease. Abdoulaye Barete told me the president's visit to the area is part of the campaign to sharply reduce the Ebola infection rate ahead of plans to reopen schools.
We are having very positive results right now in terms of confirmed cases. For the entire country, as a result of the stepping up of our efforts, both at the government level, our development partners, and above all, our health personnel on the ground in terms of contact tracers, surveillance teams, and the part of the key one is the social mobilization. So when the president last week was going all over the country, we are now recording very, very encouraging confirmed cases. 2 days ago, the cases reported were 20, and yesterday we reported 23, and today has been the lowest in terms of confirmed cases all over the country. We only reported 16 confirmed cases. And the good thing, of course, that is aiding this immediate turnover of confirmed cases is our laboratory capacity, because now we have so many labs across the country, as well as treatment and holding centers, that once somebody is suspected of Ebola, you don't have to wait 24 hours anymore for the results to be confirmed. So we are really moving into the communities to break the chain. And I think that is yielding a whole lot of dividend.
The president is scheduled to visit some parts of the country where Ebola has been worst hit areas on Saturday. Which areas are those? And will this effort to conscientize Sierra Leoneans about this dreaded disease continue?
Yes, absolutely. I think the president is on top of the situation in terms of us not being complacent, because we know what happened in neighboring Guinea when there was some jubilation that the Ebola was almost ended because they were recording very low cases. But for us, we are learning from that experience as a nation. The president is therefore leading the social mobilization pillar, which is one of the key pillars in the entire national Ebola response plan, whereby we are going to the communities to meet with the stakeholders, the district Ebola response centers, the district medical health teams, so that we can drop the point that even though we are now at the tail end in terms of beating the virus, we don't want to be complacent, because for us, as long as we still continue to have even a single case of Ebola in Sierra Leone, it is just too many. Because until we go through the cycle of the first 21 days with no record case, and later the second phase of 21, which is an accumulative of 42 days, that way the WHO can declare Sierra Leone Ebola free. So that is why the president assiduously is mobilizing all the social community efforts. And on Saturday, we will be going to the southern parts of Moyamba, which is still recording single-digit cases for the past couple of weeks, which is very concerning, and also going to Bodi Street. These are all in the southern parts of the country. And this is, of course, a continuation of the national tour the president is leading in the social mobilization. Because last weekend, we were in Cambia, in the northern parts of the country, Botsloko, Lonsa, Magoroka, and also the hometown of the president, Makeni. And so far, the results we are having in all those areas have been very encouraging. But just as I indicated, we are not going to sit on our oars. We want to make sure that we step up so that collectively, because even if we are recording zero cases in other districts, any district that records even a single case, we are still vulnerable as a country.
What is the next step forward in this fight against Ebola?
The next step is we are continuing the mobilization And also, we are now even putting modalities in place for schools to reopen. The president has given decisive instructions to the Ministry of Education, Science and Technology to put modalities in place. We are in ongoing consultations and now being carried out by the ministry with a view to reopening of schools. But for us, we are going to make sure we do that strategically so that we don't have a relapse. So that if even schools are to open very soon, as envisaged by the president, we must make sure that the avoiding of body contact is respected, because that is one sure way we can break the transmission. So as of now, the communities are owning up the virus itself. They are taking responsibility. All the stakeholders, the politicians, the paramount chiefs, the youth, the surveillance teams, the contact tracers, everybody is doing their own part so that we can melt into the collective efforts, so that the vision of the president that by March, even if we are still going to have Ebola, at least we must have a glimmer of hope that we are at the tail end to defeating the virus completely.
Abdoulaye Barrette is a spokesman for the Sierra Leonean government. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown. In Zambia, political parties have intensified their campaigns in the run-up to next week's presidential by-election. For the latest update, Richard Mulunga, a freelance journalist, joins us live via telephone link-up from the capital, Lusaka. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And how are you? How is the situation? How are Zambians reacting to the latest campaign efforts of these parties ahead of Tuesday's election?
Generally, the atmosphere here in Lusaka has been described to be peaceful as we cruise towards the polls on Tuesday next week, January 20. Although there have been a few pockets of violence here and there, but international observers such as the Southern Africa Development Community and the European Union have described the march to January 20 as peaceful generally.
The presidential election, which was thought to couldn't happen, did happen. How did it go, and how are people reacting to these presidential aspirants?
I beg your pardon?
Well, the presidential debate.
Okay.
How are people reacting to it?
This is something that a lot of the people had been looking up to. Had been looking forward to here for quite some time, and it did happen. During the week on Thursday and Wednesday, although the candidate from the Patriotic Front, the ruling party, Edgar Lungu, did not make it owing to his busy campaign in the countryside. But the other 10 presidential candidates did manage to go for the debate, and they did box, they did debate, and people have continued to react to all the material that was presented and the manifestos. Of course, the front runners, the UPND and the MMD, did struggle to convince the people that the best candidates rule the country. There's a mixed reaction to the entire campaign, but we expect a different ballgame on the ground, because it is different when these candidates are debating on a platform that is organized in a hotel, and then what is on the ground, because people base their decisions to vote on what is happening to their lives.
As the withdrawal or the refusal of Edgar Lungu, the presidential candidate of the Patriotic Front, going to harm his presidential ambitions? Because latest polls show that he possibly could win the election.
There are so many reactions to the presidential debates. According to the Patriotic Front, really, the presidential debates have got no consequence on the march to the House here, because that is just an opinion. And when you look at the opinion poll that is being run by a private TV station here, it has been described by a number of people as not being credible, because, for example, the samples that they are using to do the poll is not necessarily defined, and there are so many loopholes in it. when you talk about the debate, it's not something that is mandatory, and it really has no real effect on the voting pattern.
Thank you very much, Richard. That was Richard Mulunga, freelance journalist. He joined us live via telephone link from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. In South Sudan, Waref state government officials have begun staff training on how to manage financial resources and an electronic payroll system. State ministers, county commissioners and accounting officers attended the first phase of the training. For VOA News, Santino Manut Ayuel has more from Kwajok.
Officials said the training will be rolled out in counties and payams over the next 18 months. They say the training is aimed at improving local revenues collection, enabling the employees to understand and use electronic payroll, as well as build their capacities to monitor and evaluate how local officials are using funds meant for development projects at the county level.
Management of the resources is the most challenging in this state. So this training is going to help the planners, the management of the resources, and the implementation of the services to our people.
Ashilti Tumadi, the state local government minister, organized the training. According to him, the first round of training will focus primarily on identification of gaps that called for training.
Basically, it will train the staffs in the six counties, the leadership, the executive directors, and then the finance and establishment officers on how to manage public finance and also electronic payrolls in the counties. They will be identifying the training gap, which will be pursued in the next 18 months.
The Irifin Union is funding the training. Shigongo Losias is a senior advisor of the capacity building program.
The objective of the workshop, one, is to ensure that local government implement the local government public financial management manual, which was rolled out in the year 2013. Two, we are going to support state and local government staff by building their capacities in public financial management and the payroll management system.
Joseph Bonganyer is the state public service minister. He says the initiative will improve the performance of the state employees, many of whom, he says, are incompetent. Bong outlines some of the challenges facing the state labor force.
Low level of skill and educational background of staff, lack of proper recruitment and promotion for practice, lack of support to civil service institutions, lack of employees' performance appraisal, lack of materials for payroll machine.
Bong says his ministry will ensure the employees make use of new skill learned from training.
And Minister of Finance and Economic Planning shall form a 7-member team that will be tasked and mandated to oversee performance of the staff of the county.
The second phase of the workshop is to begin in mid-February. For BOA News, I'm Santino Manudayuel in Kwajok.
The southern African nation of Zimbabwe has long been known as a hotspot for child marriages. The United Nations says that as many as 31% of Zimbabwean girls are married before the age of 18. But two such girls say enough is enough and are challenging the government at the highest levels to lift the age of consent for girls to 18. From Harare, Sebastian Hofu reports for VOA.
Loveness Manzuru and Ruvimbo Tsopodzi were just girls when they were married and gave birth for the first time. Now the pair is challenging what they say was a violation of their rights in Zimbabwe's highest court. They are seeking to raise the legal majority age for girls from 16 years to 18, the same as it is for boys. They are also seeking the annulment of existing child marriages, a change that could affect countless girls and their families. Their lawyer, former Minister Tendai Biti, argued before the Constitutional Court this week that 18 years is the threshold to ensure that potential brides are making their own decisions. He spoke to reporters after the court session in Harare.
There is a problem in Zimbabwe of early marriages. One in three Zimbabwean woman is marrying below the age of 18. 25% are in fact being married or being impregnated before the age of 15. So these are young children. The thing is, most of these girls who come from poor backgrounds. So you've got a situation of a child carrying a child, educational attainments are curtailed, empowerment opportunities are curtailed. So it then becomes a continuous cycle of poverty.
Be it argued in court that the new constitution specifies 18 as the legal age to decide to have a family. He also says condoning marriage at a younger age violates Article 56 of the Constitution, which guarantees equal protection under the law. Emily Napambo of the development organization Plan International says child marriage fails to protect the rights of children and needs to end.
We have very high prevalence rates of child marriages, second from South Asia. So as a region, we are at 37%. But within that region, we have hotspots, which are countries with even much higher prevalence rates above 37%. For example, in Mozambique, in Malawi, in Zimbabwe, in Zambia, in all these countries, the prevalence rates are pretty close to 50%, which is high. So you're talking of, for every 100 girls, 50 of them at least get married by the time they're 18 years old.
Those who oppose child marriage say it is often provoked by poverty, lack of knowledge, and long-standing cultural beliefs. But they note that these marriages kick off a string of human rights violations by preventing girls from getting further education, which in turn can diminish their chances of getting good work and good health care. And Zimbabwean authorities say the consequences can be deadly. The incidence of two young mothers, they say, contributes to the nation's high rates of child and maternal mortality. Beatrice Savage has Real Opportunities for Transformation supporters, a group that lobbies for gender rights and is helping the two plaintiffs in the case.
So it's young people that have gone through child marriage and have really felt the consequences of marrying early, who are, you know, standing up to say it doesn't have to happen to any other child. So it's part of our ongoing campaign to on ending child marriages that we're doing in Zimbabwe. We have seen a lot of cases of child marriages in different provinces where we're going and conducting community dialogues with chiefs. The communities, even the local authorities and chiefs, really rallying behind the campaign. And so that local effort that's being done by the chiefs and local authorities has to be complemented by efforts at a national level to ensure that there's that harmony between laws and what's happening on the ground.
It is not clear when the Constitutional Court will issue a ruling in this case. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, we honor the legacy of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with a look at the quest for human rights, justice, and dignity in Ferguson, Missouri, and around the world. That's next time on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Then we'll have commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University. Personally. Well, right now it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today. I give it to you like you never had it. Screaming, judging, like speaking Chinese. Now waiting me this. Back a boom boom. Now waiting as Zaga. Cause she know one me. She talks so she know one. I know go lie. The things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood, as long as you're feeling the groove, I deal with you. Personally, 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 I go deal with you. Personally, 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 I go deal with you. Personally, professionally, I see what you're doing intentionally. Get me wanted physically, so give it to me radically. Emotionally, psychologically, you're turning me on biologically. Sexually, dramatically, and she talks that she know what I mean. I know go lie, the things within my mind. When I see you dancing, girl, you got me high. And if you wanna try, make a good day tonight. Cause I'm in the mood, as long as you're feeling the groove, I go deal with you. Personally, 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 I go deal with you. Personally, 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 I go deal with you. In a spiritually, money speaking so drastically, magically, internationally, Abba, abatically, Rama, now for dictionary, Saga, for she know one me, she talks so she know one. I know go lie, the things within my mind, when I see you dancing.
I'm Mr. Giving you all you need. Oh, yeah, Sade Wakba, Sisi Shade Wakba, Sade Wakba, Openi Wakba, Sade Wakba, Owole Wakba. Baby, go down, money go low. Sade Wakba, Sisi Shade Wakba, Sade Wakba, Openi Wakba, Sade Wakba, Owole Wakba. Baby, go down, money go low. Sade Wakba, Sisi Shade Wakba, Sade Wakba, Openi Wakba, Sade Wakba, Owole Wakba. Baby, go down, money go low. Sade Wakba, Sisi Shade Wakba, Sade Wakba, Openi Wakba.
Mr. DJ, what are you saying? Put us on a replay. After this one, put it back on replay. If you're feeling this one, let me hear you say. Dash on the beat, double bang, killing this. We don't count with the queen, we don't count for the street. Count with the twist, let it dance with your hips. Sense on the scene, now tell him what you think.
Hey,
I
on Monday night they dance with y'all. DJ why you never ask for? Play that song and then they ask for. Ask for, ask for. On Monday night they dance with y'all. DJ why you never ask for? This not the song and then they ask for. Ask for. I say, no girl to girl or man to man. We don't hold on hand to hand. Find by the girl like a BBM. Find for me girl make a BBN. Sexy girl see me with them like Titanic when I sink with them.
Tonight.
Yeah.
What you trying to do?
I'm running with you, Daddy.
Oh, yeah? You gonna roll with me? Alright, yeah, let's go. What is this?
Come the jungle, like a Indiana. Mm-hmm. Hey, You never seen her before, I guess. You never seen the way that she wanna dress. You never seen her dip it down low, swing her body like a turntable and suck her dress. I know you wanna know how she goes down low and the rhythm take control. I know you wanna know why she got me trapped in a limbo. That's what it seems. I wanna control it, yo. I'm about me, yo. I'm about all the show, I just want to know.
I get this friend where we get from Calabar, Labake, Friday. Come to think she be my personal person. But anytime when she come around, she get this feeling where they do me like fever. And when she dance with my messy boo, he dey be me like Senna for Fana. Me like how she play the bass line. It makes me sing ooh la la la. The way she the way she dat. It makes me sing ooh la la la. Oh yeah. When mommy come back, she a jump. Daddy come to me a cross. And when they ask me, it was me. That's what me talk say. I don't like this shirt, touching body. But you don't say, my mama don't like them. I don't want this shirt, touching body. But you don't say, my papa don't like them. It's a lot. Oh, na, 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 na.
Music from the continent, we hope you enjoyed it. It's now time for commentary and analysis by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Hello, Dr. Nyang.
Welcome, Africa. It's always a pleasure for me to share my reflections with the listeners of the Voice of America. Today, I intend to share with them my reflections on U.S. policy towards Africa, and I always pay close attention to African opinions on and attitudes towards the United States. So every week, I pay close attention to the headlines and to developments in the world, and then I try to see to what extent I can focus on a series of issues which are relevant in our understanding of U.S. policy towards Africa. Right now, the events of terrorism in France had serious implications for U.S. policy in Africa because it affects America's relationship with the war against terrorism, which is now so apparent in Nigeria, where a whole state is in a state of collapse because of terrorism. Unfortunately, for U.S. policy, nothing much can be done immediately to resolve the problems in Nigeria, in Mali, or all these other places where terrorism is raging. But America is primarily concerned about how not to allow the terrorists to make any successful story in these United States. And that's one of the reasons why the U.S. government pounced upon some of these terrorists who try to rock the boat in the United States. And the war against terrorism remains a major objective of the U.S. government after 9/11 and even before 9/11. So when we talk about Africa's relations with the United States, the war on terrorism becomes a real problem, a serious problem that must be dealt with frontally, effectively, and majorly. These three adjectives are very relevant in this debate because it has serious consequences, not only in saving human lives, but it is most important in keeping the peace, not only at home, but globally. So that is one of the reasons why when we talk about U.S. foreign policy in the year 2015, the war against terrorism is real, very real. And this is going to be fought vigorously because it involves human lives. And this is one of the reasons why, in developing policy, you try to separate emotionalism from reason. And you try to separate ethnicity and religion from scientific and technological development. In the year 2015, much progress is forthcoming in the realm of scientific development, technological development of human beings. Most importantly, the problem of saving human life becomes important because one human life cannot be put in dollar values. But human irresponsibility, human emotionalism could trigger pain, grief, and misery to fellow human beings. So when it comes to foreign policy between the United States and Africa, a number of political issues come to mind. First of all, how can U.S. policy assist the Africans in terms of self-governance? And this is one of the reasons why self-governance becomes primary in terms of African political development. How can U.S. policy assist African political development? The Africans have to be responsible themselves in their own territories. They must govern themselves. America can do with African countries or with any other country for that matter. America has to deal with them as moral partners, moral equal, because they are all united by biology 101. They're all human beings. But the countries are different from each other because of the manner in which they develop their moral, economic, social, and political conditions. So when you talk about American policy towards Africa, you're talking about how America can develop relationships with Africa. There are different dimensions in the relationships. Governing yourself becomes number one. Once upon a time, America was once a colony of England. But over time, the Americans were able to free themselves from colonialism. They became independent republics. Later on in history, there was slavery, which divided America from Africa. Gradually, Americans went to civil war, and black people were freed, and then they became part of the American experience. So one can therefore say, in looking at U.S. policy towards Africa, or African opinions on and attitudes towards Africa, the question of violence, self-governance, becomes very critical this year. And I'll be commenting more on this issue as we move
from month to month in the course of 2015. And that's the way it is today.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang. Guideline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sali, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, those whose palm kernels were cracked for them by a benevolent spirit should not forget to be humble. I'm your host, Peter Crotty, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is stepping up efforts to combat government corruption, the self-dealing and outright theft of public resources for private gain that undermines democracy, stifles economies, facilitates other kinds of crime, and thwarts justice. To fight corruption abroad, efforts are being made to interrupt the flow of ill-gotten gains through companies and banks here at home. Our government works hard to recover and return illicitly acquired assets found here to the people of the plundered nations. One way to prevent the laundering of the corrupt proceeds and deter further graft is to prevent the registration of anonymous shell companies on our shores. This also makes it easier for U.S. law enforcement to trace plundered funds. According to financial experts, nearly all cases of grand corruption have one thing in common. They rely on so-called corporate vehicles, such as companies, foundations, and trusts, to conceal ownership and control tainted assets. For example, according to court documents, Teodoro Ngema Obiang Monge, the son of Equatorial Guinea's president, used intermediaries and corporate entities to acquire numerous assets here that were bought with the proceeds of corruption. They included a $30 million California mansion, a Ferrari automobile, and various items of Michael Jackson memorabilia. After a lengthy investigation, he agreed to forfeit the money, which the U.S. will use to benefit the people of Equatorial Guinea. The U.S. Treasury Department recently moved to limit the use of such corporate vehicles for illicit purposes by requiring financial institutions to collect and verify the identity of the people behind them. In his 2015 budget, President Obama proposed doing even more, requiring all companies to identify who owns or controls them to federal tax authorities and make that information more readily available to law enforcement. Most U.S. companies that have a bank account or pay taxes here already disclose their beneficial ownership. It is foreign criminals and corrupt officials who can benefit from being able to conceal their identities. If they register a paper legal entity in the United States, they can use it to open a bank account offshore. Indeed, they can create a web of anonymous entities. When law enforcement agencies investigate corruption or other crimes, often all they have is a company's meaningless name. These steps will deter corruption, support law enforcement and international cooperation, and make the financial system more transparent. They also will provide a platform to engage a wide range of countries to follow suit. The more nations that take such action, the harder it will be for criminals to stash their money. Fighting corruption, including in the key area of improving financial transparency, makes an important contribution to holding governments around the world accountable to their people and protecting the world's poorest.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.